Welcome to the Chosen Brew Beer Podcast. My name's Ian McAnally, and this is the podcast where guests talk the way through the six beers that changed everything. However, this episode is the story of Froth Magazine, the six magazines, the six editions of Froth that changed everything for Emily Day, the most significant ones. Froth is recently ended, is on a hiatus. We don't know. We'll find out during this episode. Whilst Emily is talking about each edition of Froth Magazine that was significant to her, please have a look at your device. If it's compatible, it'll have a picture of the front cover, which will change each time Emily talks about a different edition of Froth. Hopefully that works. Again, Emily was a fantastic guest. You'll really enjoy this one. Thanks so much for listening. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Chosen Brew, Emily Day,
Thank you, Ian.
Prolific guest now on the Chosen Brew.
Yes, I'm a bit of a podcast hog.
Normally we don't, I
use the royal we.
I don't have return guests on the podcast for natural reasons, but today, Froth Magazine's...
I did ask to come on. Yeah. I did make this happen. I was not asked. I said, can I be a honoured guest on your show for the second time running?
I just need to learn how to say no.
You do.
But I wanted you on because we've done two podcasts for
have
the Chosen
really?
Brew. Yeah, we did an update during lockdown and you were one of the first guests.
Oh, shit.
On.
I thought this was only the second one.
Yeah, no.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Forgettable. No, it was about August. August or something last year would have been a lockdown.
Oh, okay, I think I've repressed all of lockdown.
Yeah, we recorded remotely, and I've got you back because you asked. But also, we came up with a little idea. We've started the first time I interviewed you, which was probably 4 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
You're one of the first guests on. We recorded in Beer Deluxe outside in Fed Square, and now we're recording outside again.
We are.
COVID safe.
COVID safe, yes.
And I started off by saying print media is dead.
So rude.
Which...
Oh, and now it is. Are you happy? Are you happy? This is what you've been waiting for.
Look, it's just
a newfangled podcast.
It's just a matter of time, wasn't it? We are... we're in a sad situation. Many beer lovers are pretty sad.
They're crying into their beers.
Because Froth Magazine, which has been such an important part of the beer scene, is hopefully on hiatus.
Yes, it feels like it's not quite dead. Like it feels like a horror film where it might lurch back into life. The hand might come out of the grave. So I do feel reluctant to say, you know, when you think that the serial killer's dead and then they come back in the last scene, it kind of feels a bit like that.
Are we at the part of the movie where Froth Magazine has mistakenly gone into the basement for unknown reasons?
No, Froth Magazine is lurking in the basement and when someone else comes back in.
See.
Yeah. Yes, that's true, Ian. It is a sad day. So, I feel like it, I mean, it was my decision to kind of wrap things up with Froth, but I guess I was kind of felt like I had to do it because, so the last edition, the December edition, I did not get out until February, which seemed to imply to me that I no longer was very in control of the situation. And then I realized I had about another week to get the next edition out. And I think I hit the proverbial wall, the burnout wall. And I just thought, bugger, I think I just need to have a little rest and reassess. And, you know, it was quite a big decision because, like, I had to kind of, you know, we've got a few hundred subscribers and all that. I had to kind of cancel all of them and announce it. And it's all very weird. And then you have the immense sense of failure that comes with that, of finishing a project that you don't want to finish, but you kind of can't really do it anymore. So very mixed feelings, and I posted it on Facebook and Instagram, and I actually haven't gone back to look at the messages that people have written, even though I'm sure they're very nice, but it's just too emotional for me and I wouldn't know what to say, and I just feel like a bit of an idiot, and I don't really like admitting to failure. Do you know what I mean?
I think that is...
Because I have a lot of feelings at the moment.
I think those feelings are the feelings of somebody who is constantly looking forward. Do you think?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that.
So that Froth doing a monthly magazine, like I know doing a monthly podcast, last year I didn't get one out every month.
Yeah.
Understandably. It's forgivably, hopefully. Even though I'm passionate about it, even though I want to. With Froth, it's a really big, it's not just you, it's a really big undertaking to kind of get all these disparate parts into one magazine. And as soon as you've put the magazine to print, you have to then start on the next month. It's you're in a process constantly of looking at the next, what's coming up next. And I can see that that would be easy to see that, you know, if you don't have something coming out next, then it feels like failure. But also, you've had a monthly magazine going for 5.5 years, which is an incredible success.
Yeah, I know. I can understand that. I just can't. It doesn't feel like that, I guess, because I think that at the back of my mind, like, the goal was to, like, make it financially viable and, you know, build it up a bit and increase circulation. And it was actually feeling like, so we started in 2015 and it was feeling like 2020 was going to be the year where that was going to happen. And I was like, oh my God, maybe I can like pay myself. And like, I really wanted to increase distribution like up in Queensland. And I was like, maybe I can go to Sydney and, you know, kind of reach out to more breweries there, because I don't like know a lot of them personally, so I kind of wanted to do that. And then the pandemic happened and that kind of had like a lot of advertisers pull out, which made it quite challenging. And then obviously can't really go and mingle in Sydney and places like that. And yeah, and then I guess like the stress of like lockdown and all that, even though, you know, I still have my job, so a lot of people were in worse positions. But yeah, so it's just a bit tricky, and kind of just spend a lot more time trying to find the money to keep it going, which is obviously the least fun part and super draining. And when you know all the breweries are going through a really rough time, the last thing you want to do is go to them and say, oh, you know, would you like to advertise? Because, you know, they're really stretched. So it's just all a bit, just got a bit ickier last year, as you can imagine. So yeah, so I think, and then on top of that, I also got a new job around just before Christmas, that was quite a bit more mentally and emotionally demanding. So when I clocked off, I just didn't have as much energy to do my Froth, do the old side hustle. And I think also with, sorry, I'm talking so much, but I guess that is the point of the podcast. I just feel like I'm really monopolizing this conversation.
Please.
I also feel like this is therapy, so thank you for saving me $150, because I haven't really talked about this with a professional yet. I think that a lot of people are experiencing this after the lockdown, is that everyone suddenly really started to like reassess their life choices. Like I had this woman say to me that she's writing an article about people giving up their side hustles after lockdown because they're just like exhausted, and then they want to spend their spare time with like their family and friends, not in front of a laptop or whatever. And I think I was starting to feel that as well. Like I wanted to, in my spare time, I wanted to do more relaxing things and, you know, see my loved ones. Because there's just been so many times where I've had to go, oh no, you know, it's Froth deadline, I can't come to that thing or see you. Or, you know, a lot of my friends have had kids and I feel like their kids are growing up and I'm missing out on it all. So that was kind of another motivation. But anywho, yeah, still very much mixed feelings, and I don't know if it's going to bounce back to life. I think I just needed a bit of time to have a little brain rest.
I think what was quite telling was when we initially talked about doing this podcast, you said, I said, how much of a break might you take? And I think you said something like 2 months, which I laughed out loud because I just didn't think that was a break at all. I expected it to be at least 6 months.
Oh, okay.
To you know, to be able to reflect and get things together and relaunch if that's something, you know, whether it becomes a quarterly edition or whether it becomes something, you know, different to what it has been, and maybe changing the model in which it's a magazine that people, you know, it looks like you would pay money for it, but it's free. It's probably the most surprising element of the front of the magazine, the word free. And it's a type of magazine that sits on a bar and people go up to it and have a look at it and look around to see if anyone's going to see them take it because they think somebody's going to ask me for $5, $7, $9 for this.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we're here to talk through the six froth editions.
The six froths.
That were the most significant in your froth journey.
Yes, we were. And it was a bit tricky trying to pick because I think in the end I did... Oh, I was going to say 53 editions. It was 57. There you go. So, you know.
Yeah. You know when you said you'd failed? 57
yeah,
editions
is not bad, is it?
Very impressive.
Thank you. This is nice. Can you can you call me up every morning and just say that?
On the side hustle thing, I'll just mention I went to a like this conference thing, and it was this guy talking about how he was winning at the side hustle. It was like how to win at the side hustle.
Okay.
Don't know why I went. It's very terrible, these type of things. Very nice man talked about how he was running a podcast and doing these side hustle thing and posting Instagram posts so that when people in the US wake up, that's the first post they'll see and timing it and all this. And then he started talking about how he was at a wedding and he left the wedding midway through because he just kept thinking about this side hustle that he had to finish.
Yeah, wow.
And it turns out it wasn't a side hustle. It was destroying his life. Like, the more he spoke about it, it was like, this isn't something he's doing on the side. This is overtaking. It was quite sad.
Yeah, wow.
But I think we probably do have times where, you know, certainly I have times where I'm editing this podcast and I'm thinking, maybe I should be spending time with kids. It's cost me money to do this podcast. I'm sure you've had. We might hear about some of those stories during the episode, but what's your first froth magazine that you want to talk about?
Well, the first one is The First Froth, which I was quite surprised that I found a copy of because they're rare and my filing system is not good. So I came across one. I was like, oh, a ripper. And I'm looking at it now. I've not looked at it for a while and I'm just laughing because it's got a picture of me in a pint glass looking like an absolute idiot. But full props to our artist, Michael, who created this cover at the very last minute because like all froth things, I'd stuffed up my original idea and I needed a cover and very quickly. And Michael took a photo of me and then kind of put that image of me into a drawing of a pint of beer and I look like an idiot. But the reason being was that I wanted to portray with the first edition that this was not a professional, like, you know, not some kind of like Lion Nathan or CUB production, because obviously they would never put me on the cover. I wanted to let everyone know that this is just some idiot with too much time on her hands making a beer magazine. And I think I did that very well.
I think it's great because it's got a pint of beer on the front, but then the fact that you're in the beer is confusing, which is makes you want to read. It makes you want to read it, doesn't it?
You're like, why?
Why is this? Because it's not something that you would see.
Why is this chick who's clearly not a model on the front of a magazine in a beer?
It breaks tradition.
Yeah,
from
pretty weird.
What you'd expect.
God.
You got a bit of heat, didn't you, from some quarters on this front cover?
I did. I can't remember if it was that or the picture of me in the bath that is on page 5.
People, if they haven't read Froth magazine but are listening to this, could get the wrong idea of what this magazine is.
I'm so embarrassed. I've not looked at that picture for a long time either. So the point was to try and make it look like the bath was full of beer, and in order to convey how much I like beer. And yeah, let's just skim past that one. I'm just having a look because one of the articles, which is frankly adorable, was a interview with Maggie and Dion, who now make up half of the co-conspirators. And this was an interview with them as the home brewers of the month, and just talking about how they had like this really cool setup in their backyard. And I did ask them if they were going to give up their day jobs and brew full time, and Maggie said no, which we now know is incorrect, because they did start the co-cons. Although I think they do still have their day jobs as well.
If you have conspirator in your name, you might not give the right answers. You might
That's
try
so
to
true.
Mislead.
You
people.
Can't trust them.
No, and that was the Merry Mashers at the time.
That's correct.
Still going strong.
Yeah,
and there seems to be a lot of kaiju in there. There's beer styles 101.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot's changed since this first edition. What's the date on it?
So this is... Oh, it doesn't say on the front because I forgot to put it on there. But it's... I think it was September 2015. So there's probably like 10 breweries in Victoria at that time. And now there's several hundred. I'm actually keen to read this again. I think it would be quite hilarious. Especially because I did write an article on... my definition of craft beer that I got quite passionate about. And I think if I read it now, I'd probably be a bit embarrassed. But
isn't that the sign of progress?
It is a sign of progress.
Because if you're reading it and thinking, oh, that is still nail on.
It's perfect.
Those people who do that are defective in some way generally.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I think it's nice because it's like, I think I gave away all the ads for free in it. Oh, except Moondog. Moondog was my first ad sale, and God bless them, because that was a real boost of confidence. They bought an ad for their lager, so thank you very much, Moondog. A place I used to go to a lot on their Thursday night when they would unleash their zany barrel of the keg of the week. And really inspirational brewery in my journey.
And what was the feeling that, you know, when you came up with the idea of coming up with a free magazine, like, was the idea to get to 57 editions, was it to go forever, or was it
I don't really plan ahead, I just start things, so there was no plan, I was just started and see how it went,
and obviously it went well. I mean, the feeling, you must have been quite nervous to see how it was received, but you must have been very proud when you saw it in the pub and people reading it
know. Oh, yeah, totally. Like, if I went into a pub and I saw someone read it, I would just creepily watch them and, like, yeah, almost like in a maternal way, but also a bit creepy, just watch them, see if they're enjoying it. It gave me a lot of joy and, you know, then, like, having people photograph it and photograph their Froth collection on Instagram and send it to me, stuff like that. Yeah, it was really nice to have so many people enjoy it, and I've just received so many nice emails from readers, and like lots of blokes. And I think that was my fear, was that because it's such a male industry that a lot of men would just be like, oh, you know, you're not an expert. You don't know what you're talking about. But blokes have just been like, oh, this is rad, you know, I really enjoy it, thanks so much, really interesting articles. And I've been like, oh wow, everyone's been really nice. And quite a few women of readers as well have got in touch and said, you know, thanks for making a magazine that I feel like, you know, kind of is for women as well, because often kind of blokey industries can inadvertently kind of shut out women and just make them feel not very included. So I think I had one woman just come up to me at the bar and another woman in the line in the toilet and just be like, thank you so much for making a magazine I can read. And so, you know, just little things like that were really lovely, just to feel like people were enjoying it and that it was like accessible to lots of people. So,
and there wasn't anything like it You're filling a genuine space, weren't you?
And that's why I did start it, was because I was like, where is the magazine, the free magazine for beer lovers? And it just felt like it was, obviously the industry was about to go boom, and I was working for, like, you know, mainstream newspapers that I still work for, and I was very annoyed that they would either never report on beer, on craft beer, or if they did, it would be like a joke. Like, it would be like, oh, this craft beer costs $20. Stupid hipsters, or, you know.
Here's the strongest beer in the world.
Yeah, or like, the, you know, some story about like some kind of Gabs style beer with, you know, bees in it or whatever. So it would just always be like a one-off joke. And I was kind of meeting all these brewers at beer festivals and, you know, like, Kaiju and whatnot, and just being like, these guys have taken this huge leap of faith into something that's not very mainstream at the moment and put everything into it, and I just think there's some, and yeah, all these cool new beer styles I'd never heard of, and it just felt like there was so much going on there that, and it was such a playful space as well, that I really loved the experimentation and the playfulness and the passion of the drinkers as well, like people just wanting to gather and nerd out. So it just felt like there was a huge community there, and so a little kind of print magazine would really be a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that Froth has historically done really well, which is to capture that level of creativity that the industry has and, you know, reflect it back. One of the other strong things about Froth has been the diversity of writers and giving the opportunity to people who might not have written ever in a print format. But there's plenty of examples of people who have written for Froth who, you know, would never have had that space. Has that been a interesting journey as well?
Totally. And that gives me so much joy to provide a platform for people, like you said, who would not normally have submitted their work elsewhere. And, you know, like having my mum on board, you know, like, you don't often get women in their 70s being asked to write for beer magazines. But like, and then that just really quickly, that was just going to be a once off, and then it just turned into everyone's favorite thing. Like, I don't think anyone ever said to me, oh, I really liked your article. They're just like, I love your mum's articles, which is fine. That's fine. But and then my mom just became an unstoppable force, and I didn't end up asking her to do it. She just kept doing it. So, and then, you know, having my auntie write beer recipes as well. So, and the last few editions, like, my sister's been doing the layout, so it's been a bit of a family operation. But yeah, you know, like printing like the odd beer poem or just like some fairly quirky shit has just been really fun. Or, you know, people write in some, they want to write about something that's really important to them, and I'm like, and it might be an issue, angle I'd never thought of, and so that's been really cool to kind of do that as well. And hey, that might bring us to our next edition that I'd like to
choice
talk about.
Choice two,
which is the female issue. So I kind of started doing once a year a female, and yes, the word ale is in female, so we made much of that as well. And to have all lady writers and artists in that one. And with our regular editions as well, I endeavoured to make it 50-50 chicks and blokes. And yeah, so every month I'd kind of add it up and it would inevitably be 50-50, which was really awesome. Yeah, so just like cool ladies on the cover drinking beer and just, you know, some... Oh, there we go. We've got like the history of beer that involved, like, you know, women used to make beer before it became profitable, back when it was just like making bread. It was the chick's job, and then it became a profession and we got elbowed out. And now, you know, I've got a thing about Two Birds and all the awesome ladies who are in the beer industry, and there's so many. So yeah, that's really cool to just like, yeah, I guess focus on all the chicks in the industry and hopefully like encourage some more ladies to get amongst it if they are interested in beer.
Surely types of media like this, where it's just dedicated to women, who are a minority in beer, the minority of people who listen to this podcast. Certainly mostly men who listened. Welcome. But yeah, it's one of those things that it's very frustrating to me that you could have 50% of the population kind of be, you know, a common question you might have been asked is, what's it like being a woman in beer? Or do you like beer?
The most common question I get is, do you like beer? Like, after I've said I make a beer magazine, I just get this puzzled look and people kind of pause for a moment. They're like, they really want to ask it. And they're like, do you like beer? And I'm just like, no, I hate it. I just want to spend all of my waking hours writing about it because I hate it so much. But it's just been all those decades of marketing that beer is a bloke's drink. Like, people wouldn't ask that if it was like a, you know, a pink cocktail magazine. They wouldn't say, do you like pink cocktails? You know, I'm a chick, of course I do.
Yeah, it's very masculine. And Australian society is very masculine, I feel. You know, generally. Maybe that's more a reflection of me and the lack of testosterone coursing through my veins. But I do kind of feel that it is a very macho culture. You don't have to. Maybe not. We're recording this in a nice suburb in the north of Melbourne.
I think there's not very many models of masculinity out there. Like, you've got one, and if you deviate from it as a bloke, you stand out pretty quickly. So I don't think I quite enjoy this Heineken ad, which has come out recently, and it's about the bartenders bringing the drinks over to like a man and a woman, and they give the man the beer and the woman the cocktail, and then they swap because the woman actually ordered the beer and the bloke ordered the cocktail, and it's just several instances of that happening. And so the guys are all, they've all actually ordered these kind of flowery and colourful cocktails. And then at the end, it says, and the women are all enjoying the Heinekens. And then at the end, it says, men like cocktails too. And I just thought that was, I actually really loved it, just because just seeing all these like women drinking beer gave me a lot of joy. And then all these men drinking cocktails. And yeah, just the weird gendering of beverages just weirds me out.
From a selfish reason as well, I would hate to. I want more equilibrium in beer, just for the purely selfish reason is I hate to think of going to a beer festival that was 100% men. That would be my worst nightmare.
Sounds a bit rowdy, doesn't
be
it?
Be awful. And I think from that basis, having more balance is so much better, like in venues. In life, in festivals, just out and about, it's just so much more positive. And you see it on the online space as well.
Yeah.
Like, when there's a pile-in online down near below the line comments, it's all men who are all a bit angry.
Yeah.
A bit dissatisfied with life.
That's true. I've definitely noticed since starting the magazine and today, what I've really enjoyed is like going to Gabs and whatnot and festivals like that and just seeing so many more women, so many more. I remember when I first used to go, yeah, there'd be like a couple of women and obviously just big groups of men. And now, so on the downside, it means that there is now a queue for the ladies' toilets when there never used to be. But on the plus side, just seeing like, yeah, heaps of chicks enjoying beer festivals. And as you said, the vibe is a lot more civil, a lot, and it's a lot more comfortable as a woman when there's more women there, when it's as opposed to being, you know, just one chick in a room full of blokes. So, yeah, and I think it's just going to grow with all these like little kind of suburban brew pubs popping up. And I think like you go to so many of these new ones in Melbourne and there'll just be families there and yeah, groups of women. And so it's not just like a manly space. And a lot of them are so welcoming and, you know, plants and yeah, kid friendly spaces. And because a lot of the brewers will have kids as well. So yeah, it's not just like some kind of dark blokey. That's how I imagine men hang out, just in dark caves.
Yeah. But, with sports on TV and the TAB running in the background and yeah.
Ash trees everywhere. Yes. Yeah, it's just becoming a lot more inclusive of everyone and their dogs, literally. So I'm really enjoying that aspect of beer in Australia.
Yeah, I think that's a really positive thing, particularly when you've got so many of those, you know, old places that, you know, do have the TAB in the corner or do have the TVs on. It's something I really dislike about. I don't think that's a reason to go the pub. If you want to go and gamble, go to a dedicated shop.
Yeah.
Do it there, but don't do it as part of you. Maybe, you know, there's lots of people listening who, you know, would love that aspect of being able to have a bet or something and have a
but
beer.
But they do it all on their phones now. You don't
need
it. Well,
this is the thing, isn't it? Yeah. So, Froth Magazine, we're going to come to choice three. But I just want to talk about, on the front of Froth, it says independent beer magazine.
That's correct.
What makes it independent and why is that important?
Well, it's independent because we don't do... I say we as well, as though I have like a team of thousands of minions at my beck and call. It's just me. Independent means we do not do sponsored content, so which is quite rare, especially in a free magazine, but even, you know, paid magazines do that. So
you do sponsorship, which is paid.
So we have advertising.
Advertising.
And so you know it's an ad, whereas sponsored content is when, you know, I say we should all have this beer or why this beer is wonderful or whatever. And for me, that just, like, makes me feel physically ill. But it's quite frustrating how marketing has changed in that a lot of people want it. When I say people, I don't think readers want it. Because you know when you're reading sponsored content and it's like, why is this so boring and shit and one-sided?
Well, it's like a product placement in films and TV. It's so annoying.
And
like,
it's so obvious and
it's so cringeworthy.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It takes you out of the moment. Like you're watching a film or something and they're just obvious.
And you just realize, you know, that the marketing person is just cramming something down your throat. But a lot of people, I'd say, like, oh, would you like to advertise? And they're like, oh, you know, what do we pay for an article? And I'm like, no, we don't do that. But then unfortunately they'd go, oh, well, we won't advertise. And whereas I think that, like, you know, the regular traditional advertising is valuable in that people, like, readers really like looking at it because they want to know what's new. They want to know what are the new beers.
I think there's another aspect to this, though, is that when you see an advert in Froth that you think, are they the good guys?
Yeah.
They're supporting this.
Yeah.
And so there's an extra thing to factor into the dollar spend for a brewery, I think, supporting something that is independent, that is well-liked, that has integrity, because then that spend is kind of saying, hey, look, we're part of this. We're supporting this.
That's not correct.
Spending our dollar in mainstream media.
Yeah.
We're spending it here to promote, you know, people like us, people who we like, the community. And that, you know, it's hard. The difficult thing is hard to measure the impact of something like that.
Yeah.
But I certainly think that's definitely part of...
I should have had you selling ads for me. That was a really great argument. I never used that.
Yes. It's a shame.
God damn it.
It's a shame Froth is dead now.
It's not dead.
We could have made something so good together.
We could have made something beautiful.
Yeah, because I'm getting so much advertising spend off this podcast. So. choice three.
So choice three, this is May 2018, and this is purely for the front cover, which is by Clint Weaver, who was our designer since day one. We met in a bar at a kaiju event, and then the next day he emailed me and said, I'm the guy you met in a bar last night. I want to do your design. And I was like, I have no recollection of meeting you, but sure, let's do this. And
did that meeting take place?
I don't know.
We'll smooth over it. Clint, previous guest of The Chosen Brew, talked through the six can designs that changed everything.
Yeah.
This front cover really did catch fire on social media.
It did. So what he's done is he's drawn what looks like a Gabs Festival setup, but he's kind of taken the piss or done a little pun with all of the brewery names. And people had to try and guess what they were. So he's got, you know, good shepherd instead of bad shepherd, three birds instead of two birds, entry instead of exit. So just like the most amazing cartoons, and he's drawn like the actual brewers, and so you can find yourself in it. I can see myself and my dog in it. It's absolutely wonderful, and it's absolutely packed, jam-packed with puns, and you can stare at it for a very long time. And yeah, the amount of time we spent on this, poor guy, it was very intense. And he did this 2 years in a row, actually. And yeah, it was very much looked forward to and very well received, and people just loved finding themselves or their brewery or their favourite breweries on the cover. So yeah, just absolutely overjoyed with what he created there, and very skillful dude with an amazing sense of humour.
And quite a relatively brave front cover as well, because it's kind of really eye-catching but intricate.
And it is. Generally, it's like a Where's Wally.
Yeah, generally you would not put something like that on the front cover because you want just something, simplicity and boldness.
That's true.
But this is really works, I think, because the white background really makes it stand out.
But I think people do want to just grab it and have a look at it. And yeah, kind of like a Where's Wally, try and figure out what everything means in it.
And to make sense of all of the humorous twists and turns. And it is very nice. So well done, Clint.
Good on him. It's very clever.
Emily, tell me about how difficult or easy it was to pick these six editions of Froth that mean the most to you.
Well, Ian, it was quite easy because I was like, there was only a few that I could find in my house. So I've recently moved house, so I don't even know where a lot of my Froth magazines are. So these are the
only ones that you can find. That's that puts a different spin on this podcast.
No, it's a carefully curated selection.
It was a but coincidentally.
It
not
was,
only
it was
were
more
they...
that I was frankly surprised that the ones that I found did include the ones that I wanted to talk about. So, for instance, the next one.
Choice 4
from April 2019 is our lager issue.
Describe this. This is quite humorous. What was the inspiration behind this cover?
So I guess this... for the lager edition, so this is kind of my passion project because I'm an absolute lager fiend, and I think that lagers get a bit of looked down upon in the craft beer industry, but I think a well-made craft lager is one of the most beautiful things in the world, quite frankly. And so Clint has drawn a kind of British-looking skinhead saying, The skinhead is saying, just give us a pint of draft, thanks, love, cheers, mate. None of that fruity stuff, though, eh? And he is holding a frothing pint, and the subtitle is Lager, 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 which I believe is from the song.
Chumbawamba.
No, the one from...
Mega, Mega.
Yeah, that one. Is it Train Spotting?
Yes, Lager, it was Train Spotting,
anyway,
yeah.
I had that in my head for the duration of making this edition.
I was getting confused with Chumbawamba's hit song, I Get Knocked Down But I Get Up Again.
He has a lager drink.
Yeah,
he has a cider drink.
Which references lots of different
Another
drinks.
Great lager song.
Do you know that song made it through the... You know, the British censors are quite archaic in
really?
What they all ban.
Yeah.
And... they got it through the censors because one of the lyrics is pissing the night away, which they repeat.
Yeah.
Now, that would never make it past the censors
really?
In the UK. Absolutely not.
Because of the word pissing?
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
But it did because Chumbawamba submitted it and said it was kissing the night away, which was fine.
That's fine, but no pissing. I can't believe they have a problem with the word pissing.
Yeah, there's a long list. I believe in Australia, say in broadcasting, there's two words you can't use. In Britain, it's a triple digits, the words you couldn't use. There's a lot of offensive words that you couldn't say.
That's fascinating.
It's quite a shock for a British person coming to Australia watching breakfast TV where they're dropping all of these censored words that would think, this guy's going to get the sack. Oh, no, it's fine.
That's fine. Yeah.
But I like the way that you identify the skinhead as being British style skinhead on the front of his.
That's very true.
He's very pale. I mean, that's a giveaway.
I think it was maybe it was like the kind of leather accessories that he's wearing. He's wearing kind of a leather singlet or vest.
Yeah, kind of
poor. I'm really sorry.
No. It's part of my culture. He also has bad dental work, which I'm very
that's
fond
very,
on.
That's
fond
very
of.
True. Sorry.
No, I mean,
I was born in Britain, so.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents aren't British, so I'm not British, but you know.
Yeah.
I understand your heritage and where you come from.
Clearly. This is.
I think it was that kind of 80s British punk look, but in an elderly, decrepit man that we were going for as kind of the stereotype of lager drinkers as being, you know, unrefined. And but I think that lager is, yeah, as I said, a real joy. And I was just thinking of someone who's really great to talk to about lagers is Michael Stanzel from Burnley Brewing.
Yeah.
He's of German extraction, and he learnt how to make lagers at a lager brewery in Germany. So he's makes some incredible lagers over at Burnley, including some pretty fun twists. Like I had their peach lager recently, and I think they've had, I don't know, pineapple lagers, mango lagers, all these fun different styles, as well as like their straight Hellas is just to die for. Like it's just perfectly balanced. It's just exquisite. And I guess with the kind of beer trends leaning towards all these ridiculous double, triple hazies with double dry hopped and, you know,
pastry stouts. But,
yeah. Am I allowed to swear now that I know that all these?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
I was going to say with, you know,
fuck the BBC.
Fucking oat creams and like lactose in everything. Like what the fuck is with that? When did we start putting lactose in beer? I just find that so disturbing. So I'm just really appreciating clean lager.
And you said that this character on the front was unrefined, and it's like the unrefined person going for lagers, which lager is probably the most refined style that you could have. It's very difficult to make.
It does need a lot of time to lager, which, you know, to become lager. You can't just spin it out overnight. It needs time to mature or do whatever the hell it's doing when they...
Do a very good joke doing whatever the hell it is doing. Yeah, that's very
correct.
Fine. I think, yeah, the Burnley Hellas is just a great example of, you know, simplicity just done so well.
Just a great bloody beer.
I kind of go back and forth on lagers.
Okay.
I think the reason why it's a bit of a style that people look down on or don't dig is just simply because it's so mainstream. It's the most popular beer style in the world. Those macros are all lagers. And so it does have that so strong association with that. And perhaps that's where, you know, that negative association comes. But when you kind of divorce yourself from that, wow, it is such a... I could actually drink a lager right now. But we won't. We will do choice five.
Okay, so this is hilarious. I love this edition. So this is the opposite of the lager edition. This is the hype issue. So this was March 2019, edition 38. And so I just wanted to really investigate and also take the piss out of all those kind of crazy hazy beers with like donuts in them or whatever. So my friend Mark Murray, who's a wonderful photographer, he helped me with this cover and we had the absolute best fun. So I've got a pint glass and we filled it up with it's actually orange juice or pineapple juice or something because we wanted it to look really thick. I chucked a bunch of sparkles in there as well because there was like some glitter beers coming out as well. We dipped the top in chocolate and in, what are those things called? Sprinkles. And then that's actually, it looks like it's got whipped cream on top. It's actually shaving cream. And then we've put in a little cocktail umbrella, a lollipop, a straw, and an actual donut. Getting that donut to sit still long enough so we could take the photo, next time I would use a fake donut, because I think we had about 2 seconds before it just absolutely crumbled and fell off. So we went through about 6 donuts trying to get them to perch on the side. So it was quite a challenge.
This is good behind the curtain stuff. It's a beautiful front cover. It's eye-catching.
It's such a fun shot.
Did you get the ire of ABAC for this front cover?
It does look very attractive to children this year.
It does. The thing is, it's like, it is a bit of a, it feels like it's a bit of a sarcastic take on the hype. It's called the hype issue.
Yeah.
But it actually looks really fun.
It does look fun.
It's really nice and intriguing and exciting.
Yeah, I have to say I'm appreciating the picture a lot more now, because at the time when I first saw it, I was just like thinking of all the bits where I was just really struggling to get all those things to stick into the shaving cream. But yeah, it was just really fun to be a bit silly and bright, and also to do a photographic front cover, because we usually have the illustrations. So it's just fun every now and then to have a photo and mix it up a bit. And then, yeah, Clint's put all these humorous words around it, like now with extra donut made from moon yeast, extra juicy negative IBUs. So just all those kind of silly words that were starting to pop up.
Wet, dry, and moist hopped.
Moist hopped beers that are the most popular, I believe.
That is
everyone
awful,
wants the word
frankly,
moist
isn't it?
On their beer yeah. can.
And one of the things that strikes me about froth, because I do have a bit of a back catalogue of froth.
Excellent.
Is it really is a time capsule. Like, sure, this podcast operates in that respect as well, because people can go back historically, listen to episodes, you know, those discussions about things that, you know, are no longer relevant or, you know, could have been predicted or... but I think there's something really compelling about seeing a visual as a time capsule. Like, how much have you seen change since that first edition in 2015 to your 57th edition?
Yes. Yeah, it's very... it is true. I think it does provide quite an interesting, what do you call it? Like a record of how the beer industry's changed over what was such a massive period of change. And yeah, just going from these tiny breweries and the model of, like, I feel like we had like maybe 2 brew pubs in Australia and they were all in regional areas. Like, you'd never have a brew pub in the city, and then suddenly having them pop up in absolutely every neighbourhood. I mean, there's ones around me that I still haven't gotten to yet. So just people realising that having your own tap room is a much better business model than trying to get your beers into these limited shelves that are, and you're competing with hundreds of other breweries. So yeah, it's been just massive.
And one of the stark changes is that in that first edition, all the ads, and in probably the second and third and fourth edition, all the ads are of bottles.
Yeah.
Which is...
I know.
No one saw coming that change. Like,
cans would be a thing.
Seeing kaiju in a bottle is kind of really...
That's so true.
...strange in that initial...
That's very true. And I'm trying to think. I reckon you could even, yeah, look through froth and you could see when the cans first started... I'm just trying to think. I wonder, it must have been Pirate Life that really popularized, because they just skipped the whole bottle phase. They went straight into cans, and they obviously blew up for very good reason. Their beer's amazing. Their branding's amazing. And they worked really hard to get to do what they did. So I think, and then people would have been seeing them blow up and just been like, oh, cut me a slice of that. You know, cans are so hot right now. People want to take stuff to the park or music festivals. So I remember the first time I went to a music festival, like Golden Plains, with an esky just filled with cans, because it's a glass-free festival, and I had like, I don't know, like 30 old just different single craft beers, and it was like a lucky dip. It was so fun, and kind of, you know, comparing eskies with my friends, it was so exciting.
And do you think when we look back at the period of froth that you've covered perhaps the most interesting growth period for Australian craft beer?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think it's, yeah, because it just went from, yeah, such a small industry to what it is now, which is, you know, you've got people like, what are they called? Are they called Founders First?
Yep.
The ones that are just like investing in breweries and, you know, like people are realizing that there's money to be made. It is, it is a massive growth industry. So it's, yeah, immense change. And I don't think I would have picked that it was going to get this big and become so normalized as well. I think it used to always kind of bug me going into bars and whatnot, and you'd have like two choices, and now you can, yeah, go to bars and restaurants and they'll have thought about their beer selection. It won't just be like a great wine list and then like, you know, VB. They will have something local, and yeah, it's bloody well everywhere.
And the exciting thing is, I think there's so far to run, so much growth within the segment, the segment.
Yeah. I think it's a segment. Yes.
That you know, it is still going to be interesting how it develops.
Yeah, yeah.
But I kind of feel that getting those kind of the baby years.
Yeah.
You know, seeing the toddler start to walk.
Yeah.
Is probably the most compelling and interesting time. And then to have that physical record of how the scene developed and who was involved in the scene.
Mm.
Because people are hugely important, aren't they, in craft beer? I think froth really kind of recognizes that and celebrates not only beer but also people. Do you think that's fair to say?
Well, definitely. And I mean, that's what really drew me to beer, as well as the beer itself, obviously, was meeting the people and just like that level of passion and just how interesting and fun everyone was.
Is.
I know, I was going to say is, but I kind of feel like now some people are just getting into it for the money. But then it was like you got into, I think, like I remember saying to Nat from Kaiju, like asking him about becoming a brewer, and he was, I think he mentioned something about it's a fun way to discover abject poverty or something. Like, and I think they're doing well now, but just seeing all these people who are like just not making any money and working really hard and for this thing that they're super passionate about, that there was just so many great characters. And because it was a lot smaller, so it just kind of felt like, you know, a country town where you know everyone in it.
It's a really nice community in that respect. And it was interesting as well, just on that point about abject poverty, is that someone recently posted on one of the Facebook groups about, you know, what would be the kind of the expected salary for a head brewer.
Yeah.
It's small.
It's bugger all, isn't it? It's not something you'd get into for the money.
And it is something that therefore then has to be driven by passion.
Yeah.
And it's really nice, I think, that there is this ecosystem like podcasts, like Froth, who are there to kind of recognize people and celebrate them.
Yeah.
Because they are doing a job for the love of it, not for the...
Definitely,
For the money, not for what they can get out of it. And I suppose we get a bit misguided by takeovers and things like that and people becoming multimillionaires overnight.
Yeah.
It takes years to be an overnight success, as we know.
That's true.
But choice five.
Oh, choice five. Alrighty.
Have we done? Have we got two left?
We've got one left.
One left.
So this is
choice six.
Was I supposed to do six? We're 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello. I just thought I'd drop in here just to acknowledge that Emily and I, particularly me, got a bit confused about how many editions of Froth we had talked about. As you know, we were actually up to the sixth. We were completely on track, on schedule, but the mishap actually allowed me to tell a little story close to the end of the podcast, about an edition of froth that had particularly affected me. I'll also take this chance now just to say, if you're not already on the mailing list, I'll send you maximum of 2 emails a year, I'm sure. Log on to chosenbrewau.com and sign up to the mailing list, because there's going to be some exciting news and I want you to be the first to hear about it. Let's get on with it. Huh. If you haven't got a sixth, choice six will be the
future. That could be your favourite one.
Froth episode.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, okay, I'll do it. I'll do mine.
I'm sure you've got a favourite one that you think about all the time.
Yeah.
You sleep with next to your pillow. So choice...
I'm sorry. Choice five.
Choice five is what some might call the final edition of Froth, or it could just be the one that just came out. So this is the December-January edition, which came out in February because I was just knackered. Oh, another humorous twist is that I recently discovered that I'm super low in iron. So I was experiencing like this extreme burnout, but now I'm just like, was it just iron? Did I just need a steak?
There'll be plenty of people screaming it wherever they listen. Drink Guinness. Yeah, no, drink
it. Drink Guinness.
Yeah.
Have iron in it.
It's a negligible amount of iron, but okay. They did used to sell it on the basis that it had high iron content.
All right,
content.
Well, I'll go get a Guinness after this. This one just took a bit. I just was so flat. God, I could not achieve a single thing.
So you're saying that you were a bit flat when you were getting this one out. So
yeah.
When you look at this, is it this an edition where you kind of you're looking at it with a wince?
It just hung around my neck like an absolute albatross.
And there is a seagull on the front.
Oh my God, there is a seagull. So this is
maybe
the ancient
not. It should be
Mariner
an albatross
edition. That's hilarious. So we have a front cover amazingly done by Corey Harbrow, who's done quite a few covers for us. He's a Kiwi chap. I think he's just moved back to Auckland because he's having a baby. Congratulations, Corey. But he's just an absolute gem. So for every cover that he did, the brief that I gave him was pretty much one word. So for instance, the summer edition. And then like a day or two later, he'd come back with a sketch. How about this? And I would be like, perfect. So it was just such a seamless process. And so this one, he's drawn this wonderful image of a tentacle. So he's got this big octopus underwater, a tentacle holding a beer bottle, and then a seagull is swooping down on it. And then it's got the big word summer half submerged. And I'm just like, yes, bonus points for octopuses because I love a cephalopod. So yeah, Corey just absolutely kicks it out of the park every single time. I've got a photo of me and my dog when he was extremely fluffy in it.
This is a sign of how the industry has changed and progress, is that on the third page of this edition, the most recent edition, there's an advert from a hop company.
Yeah.
Advertising their hops.
Yeah.
Now that just simply wouldn't have been possible. Or really...
Well, I think they haven't released a hop in 6 years. So that is also... So that, I mean, that was absolutely fascinating, this hop story. So this is HPA's new hop, Eclipse. And just hearing about that story and how it takes, like... God, I think it was like 14 years or something from when this was the sparkle in its father's eye to... being released as a hop with an actual name is such a long process. And just, you know, think, so if this was starting to be developed in like 2006 or whatever, and you'd be like, okay, what are brewers going to want in 2020? I hope they like something that tastes like mandarin, because that's what we're making. But I guess I believe that that's not how they did it. They, you know, they had all the different lots of different competitor hops, and they weeded them all out, you know, which one does the best, which one's going to be the most stable and dependable, and then have a flavour that no other hop has. It's got to have a point of difference. And they had to, like, kill off some of their favourite hop varieties because they weren't quite good enough. So it's just this immense process that's really fascinating. And I tried some of the beers that have it in it, and, yeah, it is really different and really fascinating. So... hops is so fun. I love hops.
Yeah, amazing, and so lucky to live in a climate where a hop yield can be very positive, and also how highly in demand Australian hops are around the world as well.
Yeah, Galaxy went off, and, you know, Eclipse might as well.
Mm-hmm. Pride of Ringwood, Vic's Secret. Foster's famous hop variety. There's been some people as well, some of the breweries who are advertising were not in existence when Froth started, but there's like, I've just seen an ad from Kaiju being from edition one right throughout.
I would really like to thank Kaiju for supporting us so much. Yeah, really, really grateful to Callum and Nat, and now Brett, who's doing their marketing for them. Just, yeah, a lot of love for Kaiju, and cannot thank them enough for their support.
And the ad for your beer.
We do have a big ad from the co-conspirators for the editor, which gives me a lot of joy whenever I see this beer. So this was supposed to be a one-off beer because it was our birthday and it was the co-conspirators' birthday. I think it was our third birthday and their second birthday. And then it did so well that they've been, you know, brewing more and more batches of it. Do you know why I think it's doing so well? Because whenever I see it in the fridge, so I see my little dog's face in the fridge and I feel bad, so I buy it. So I think it's just me.
It's a delicious beer.
It's so good.
Do you remember when it hadn't been out very long, that first run, and there was a place, I think it's in South Melbourne, and they had it listed as the Secretary?
Oh my God.
Which was quite...
That was hilarious. Yes, they had it as the Secretary, and I was just like, wow, could you be more hilarious? Women are allowed to have other jobs now. That's so funny. No, it is the editor. It's a passion fruit and guava hoppy sour. And also, big thanks to co-conspirators who, since they started, even though they're all doing it on top of their day jobs, have advertised with us as well. You know, I would just really love to thank all our advertisers, like Exit Brewing's been a great supporter. Beer 360, this really lovely bar and bottle shop in Richmond.
You could go to Exits and Beer 360 in the same afternoon.
They're very close. And, you know, Stone and Wood's been fantastic. Yeah, just quite a few of Bright Brewery, Bridge Road, Holgate. Yeah, just these lovely breweries who've been great, such great supporters, and really wonderful to be like, get to know them, like really lovely people to deal with as well.
So choice six, this is
did I write about you at all?
You did twice.
Oh
yeah. Seems a lot.
Seems like too much.
But I not long started a podcast and was very kind of, I just didn't, like, you didn't have a plan when you started Froth. I kind of didn't know. I didn't know much about audio. I didn't know whether this would be something people want to listen to. And it was just a really nice way to meet people passionate about beer. And it's a real privilege to sit with people who are talking about something that they're passionate about. It doesn't really matter that it's beer, although that helps. But if they were passionate about fire extinguishers, it's kind of a joy to hear somebody... You know,
now that's a chat I would listen to.
Yeah, get into the zone over that topic. So I was very flattered to be in, I think it must have been a February edition, because, and actually Clint mentioned this front cover when he was on The Chosen Brew, about how you challenged him on this front cover, because the front cover that he was going to draw was fairly heteronormative, and he said that you'd had a bit of a to and fro on it.
Okay.
Do you recall this?
I recall a lot of to and fro's with Clint about covers.
So it was a Valentine's edition. It was Cupid and...
Oh, okay, yeah. And it was like a bloke and a chick or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, and then did he turn it into two beer bottles instead?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the beer bottles are kind of kissing each other.
That's right.
Now, that edition, you don't know, I haven't told you the story before, but I think this is probably a good one to end on, because that edition featured me I think there was a photograph and write up about the podcast. It was only a small. I was delighted it's been at least half a page, but.
Sorry.
No, so if, I'll put me in the next. Oh no, wait. Oh,
I'll put you in the Froth reboot.
Froth reboot. Yeah. Maybe I should buy sponsored content.
Yeah, you might have to pay for that one, I'm afraid.
So, it was very nice to be featured in it, but I haven't told you this, but. A few months later, my parents came out and were visiting from the UK, and I was in the Windsor Ale House on Punt Road with my dad, who is a big fan of Guinness, and they do a fine pint of Guinness in the Windsor Ale House, as well as many other independent craft beers. And I was sat down, and we'd had a couple of pints, and I noticed that they had some Froth magazines, and thankfully, the system of rotating Froth magazines was not good. So there was lots of old editions. And I really like this in pubs because it meant that, you know, if you'd missed the month, you could perhaps, you know, get something from your back catalogue. And they had like, you know, four or five of, you know, some older editions. But they had this edition, which I was in. And it's very hard to explain to my parents in the UK what a podcast is, what it means, why I'm making one about beer.
Yeah.
You know, for them, this is a very alien concept. And why would I be wasting my time doing this? And why would anybody want to listen? But it was nice because I spotted the and opened it up on the page that I was featured, and my dad had a sense of pride on his face that I hadn't seen for many years. So thank you for causing that.
That's wonderful.
Which was very sweet story, a very nice moment. I still don't think he understands what a podcast is or why I do it. But,
but nice. He's proud of you nonetheless.
It was nice to have some sort of recognition in a wider sense. So that was the February edition. I don't know what year it was, 2017, I imagine.
Nice.
Thank you, Emily. We'd normally ask you for a snack to go with these magazines and a receptacle to keep them in.
That's hilarious.
Where does Saddam Hussein keep his Froth magazines?
Is this a joke?
In Iraq.
Oh, my God.
So that's an old reworked joke, that one, because Saddam is no longer with us.
I like to end on an awkward Saddam Hussein note.
Yeah, why not? First time for everything.
I'd just like to say thanks, Ian, for having me for the third time. Thanks for letting me muscle my way onto your podcast. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And, hey, if you've got any ideas about a Froth reboot or how I can make this work, because, you know, I haven't killed it. It's still, you know, we could do CPR on this baby yet. So chuck us an email and give me your business ideas because I don't have any of my own. Thank you.
I'll put your email address in the show notes for anybody who would like to email you ideas.
Constructive criticism only.
Yes. Yeah. I've got loads of ideas. I've shared some with you already.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's lots of very smart people listening to this podcast who would also have some suggestions, some of which you might take, some of which you might not. But it's good to have a lot thrown at the wall and then decide,
isn't
it? Let's
brainstorm.
So I think that would be really nice. And yeah, thanks for listening. And we'll catch you next time for another episode of The Chosen Brew, where someone will not be talking through the six magazines that changed everything. Or the five.
Or the five.
Plus one. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.
So that was it, Emily Day, Froth Magazine. I mean, it's a bit of a tease, isn't it, that we don't know whether Froth will be back. I hope it'll be back in some form because, personally, I got a huge amount of enjoyment of reading Froth Magazine and just seeing Froth Magazine in and around venues and seeing people, particularly people who are not really into beer, being intrigued and reading it in a bar when they were waiting for somebody rather than being on their phone, which is what a sweet thing that is. If you haven't already, please do spend a moment just to review the podcast on iTunes, or if it allows, on any other platform, or share this podcast or your favorite episode with a friend. That would be much appreciated. Until next time, I'll see you soon.